Listen. Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, your Seahawks Superfan. I've got a lot of spare time as a Superfan now going forward, which we'll talk about a little bit once we get to recapping my game with Tim the Falcon Superfan. Divisional weekend, guys. Huge, huge weekend. Some great games. We're finally at the point where, with the possible exception of the Houston Texans, these are all just the very best teams left in the NFL. So let's not delay and get right to the recaps.
Hey guys, it's your Atlanta Falcons superfan, Tim. I am joined a little bit less excitedly this time by our Seattle superfan, Justin. Justin, how we doing?
How we doing?
It's a simple question.
It is. The answer is complex. Am I happy? No. Am I in a good place? Probably not. Does that answer your question? I doubt it.
Can I tell you a fun story from the bar during the game to maybe lessen your load right now? So you know when Russell Wilson threw the one interception that was a real interception, not the juggle nonsense where the guy was actually down interception? All right, so the bar I was at allows dogs. And as soon as we all start losing our minds for the Ricardo Allen interception, this dog just hikes his leg and pees all over this random dude. Like, rocking loafers, just piss all in his loafers.
Oh, that's awesome. Man, so, yeah, that's what I need to hear.
Yeah, and the guy was wearing a Julio jersey to boot. So it wasn't like he was picking on a Seattle fan or anything like that. No, he was just picking on this kid who just thought that he'd be cool and come hang out with us at the bar. It was actually hilarious. And it was even better because we didn't know the guy. So then you can laugh without even having to feel bad.
You can. No guilt for it.
This game,
the game started off exactly kind of, you know, how I talked about, right? You know, the Seahawks kind of, march down, score,
like a
long drive to start the game. Yeah, real long drive, right? You know, Thomas Rawls is carrying the load, moving really well. And then sort of like you'd expect from the number one offense, I mean, the Falcons do the same thing. And we have the first game all year in which there's only two drives for the entire quarter.
It was a fun first quarter, too. Like, it wasn't stressful. Yeah. Like, we're sitting there, you know, we're losing at this point. But, like, it felt fun. Because I'm like, everything is working. Like, you know, I understand that the defense is going to play like this. You know, I've watched this team all year. I know what's going to happen. But, like, Matt Ryan's just being smooth, methodical. You know, got hit a couple times on that first drive and was just like, that's fine. Hit me. I'm just going to keep throwing. And, you know, we were able to get Julio involved against Richard Sherman, which is always nice. And on that first drive, like, it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And then things got a little interesting.
Yeah, the game couldn't have started out better, I think, for either one of us almost, in that it was a really good game. And, you know, looked like both teams were going to, you know, make it really exciting. And then the Seahawks, you know, get the ball again. They drive down pretty effectively again, have to settle for three. And then get the ball back. I'm not sure if it was a three and out, but the Falcons have to punt on the next drive. And I'm thinking, okay, here we go, right? Now, you know, we can separate, get the lead. And it starts off with this amazing 80-yard Devin Hester. Yeah, that Devin Hester.
Yeah.
Return. And all of a sudden, we're up by three, but on the 10, knocking on the door, possibly about to go up by, you know, 6 or 10. And then there's a penalty. And this penalty, you ever watch the show? I think it's on NBC Sports, Turning Point.
No.
It's actually a really, really good football show. And what they do is that they highlight a specific moment from football games where everything changes. And this is the turning point of this entire game.
That's the moment. Absolutely.
Yeah. Like this stupid holding penalty, like the call wasn't stupid. It was absolutely 100% a hold. He tackled the guy, right? And there's arguably another holding down the field on Richard Sherman. Ticky-tack one, but...
That's the hold that I thought was being called. Like, from where we were sitting, that's the hold we thought.
If it was
we didn't
that
see
one, I'd
the
be
one
a little
line.
Annoyed because it was kind of ticky-tack, but the one that they called, yeah, that was such a hold. But so, instead of it being an 80-yard return, right, all of a sudden, the Seahawks, instead of being on Atlanta's 10, are on their 10. That's an incredible change of field because of a penalty. Huge. And then, two plays later, the backup guard because our starting guard went out with an injury. As soon as the play starts, steps on Russell Wilson's foot, and he immediately falls backwards into the end zone for a safety. Now, Packers got the ball, plus 2 points, rather than the Seahawks being either up by 6 or 10.
Can I tell you my favorite part of that play?
Like two plays I've ever seen in my life.
Do you want to know who got the sack for the Falcons? Ben Garland. Have you heard this guy?
Never.
He's an offensive lineman that we rotate in on defense because we're thin at defensive tackle.
Oh, man.
So an offensive guard made a sack for a safety because of your backup offensive guard.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned this in the chat, too. You know, in the backup guard's defense, in addition to embarrassing himself by tripping Russell Wilson into a safety and pretty much screwing the entire game, he did also get completely whipped and obliterated on that play as well. So, you know, it's not – there's not any silver lining there. He's garbage.
Oh,
but
yeah,
that changes everything.
Brooks Reed had his number all game.
Oh, man. Yeah, he was Odhiambo. He's – like, Jermaine Ifedi did not have a great year, right? You know, he was brought in for potential, and he's definitely not hit it yet. But, man, he's so much better than Reese Odhiambo, who was just a dumpster fire. I mean, when Reese Odhiambo went in – and, you know, injuries might be another story this game. When Reese Odhiambo went in, that Falcons defensive line all of a sudden started looking like the Houston Texans defensive line. Like,
and mind you, at that point, like, Beasley's only playing situational because there's something up with his shoulder again. And Claiborne's out for the rest of the postseason with a torn bicep at that point. So it's like, it wasn't
Claiborne's
even like
out.
You were getting beat by our starters. Like,
Beasley
that guy came in and
shows
was
up.
Just, he was a revolving door. And
man, and so like from that point on, everything changes, right? So, you know, rather than being ahead by I'm gonna say probably what would have been 10, you're down a couple, and Falcons have the ball and they score, and then it's halftime, not longer for that, so they get the ball back and score again, and all of a sudden, oh man, you were down by a lot of points, and then, like, you know, with it against an offense that explosive, then there's not much that you're gonna do. You know, and so the your guys' offense starts doing whatever they want. I mean, you know, they run when they want to run, they pass when they want to pass. There's no situation to dictate what they have to do, so they just start going to town. And I mean, you know, the Seahawks force a couple of punts, but no takeaways. That offense just starts going up and down the length of the field. And every time the Seahawks look like they're starting to muster some kind of comeback, which they are capable of against anybody, there's an interception. There's, you know, a punt, at one point it was like 4th and 1, down by 16, like about a quarter to go against an offense that is whipping you, but their defense, if there is a vulnerability, it's there. So what do? They promptly punt it, which turns into a 99-yard scoring like Falcons drive. I mean, man,
in 2.5 minutes, 2.5 minutes, they got that 99-yard drive. And it was like, we're sitting there and at that point, it was like, all right,
I don't think I can walk 99 yards in 2.5 minutes.
I don't care if it's Green Bay. I don't care if it's Dallas. I don't see anybody stopping that. Because if you can march 99 yards in 2.5 minutes against Seattle, and now, mind you, like, without Earl Thomas, and you guys are a completely different team without him, but you still have a lot of pieces in that defense, 2.5 minutes, 99 yards is sick. Like, that's disgusting. And the dome was
like,
rocking.
If I wasn't a Seahawks team, I would think it was awesome.
Yeah, like, you would have thought that the Falcons fans were the 12s yesterday. Like, it was so loud in there. So,
yeah, no,
man,
I mean,
it was fantastic.
And so, you know, there's, you know, obviously it's from the Seahawks perspective, and, like, full credit to Falcons. The Falcons didn't win because of anything that the Seahawks did. The Falcons won because of what the Falcons did, which was score points whenever they had the ball. You will win football games if you do that. However,
yeah,
just
absolutely.
From the Jets' perspective, obviously that Devin Hester play was huge. There was a bunch of other returns that were – I think every time he returned the ball, he would run at least like 40 yards, and it would be called back by a holding call, and so it would be back from that spot minus 10. So that sucks. Having no Earl Thomas, you know, when Earl Thomas went down, I said that we're not a Super Bowl team. I think we're not even a top 10 defense anymore.
I would agree with that.
Overly optimistic. We went, and like somebody spit this stat out, we went from being the number two at that point in defensive value at a red DVOA, so the number two overall defense in the league when he was in, to 30th.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely
and
believe
that. And that's against, like, the Rams and, like, the 49ers to, like, finish out the year. Like, it's not like we ran through, like, a bunch of teams like the Falcons all of a sudden. Like, we took on the Falcons early when we had Earl, and we were like number two in DVOA. We take on the Niners without him, we're 30th. I mean, if the Raiders' results were the best case for Derek Carr as MVP, the Seahawks result is the best case for Earl for defensive MVP. I don't think there is a single player more valuable to his defense in all of the NFL than Earl. And you put that up against a elite offense like that, yeah, you're going to get torched. I mean, in our preview, right, I talked about how the Falcons haven't beaten, like, top defenses. Well, they didn't beat one today because they're facing the Seahawks defense. That's not a top defense at this point, not without Earl. So, yeah, I'm miserable. It sucks. Like, I can't be mad because the Seahawks didn't deserve to win that game. The Seahawks were not the better team on the field yesterday. That's abundantly clear to anybody who watched the game. The Falcons have a shot to win it all for that offense, especially if their defense continues to gel and get better. And my Seahawks, man, they better figure some stuff out this offseason. How are you doing? How are you feeling? What are you thinking?
You know, I'm feeling pretty good. So I just want to, you know, bring everybody behind the curtain right now. It's 7:30 p.m. on Sunday. Right now, Green Bay is playing Dallas, and Dallas just scored a touchdown and got the 2-point conversion. So it's 28-28. Like, I legitimately thought I was going to have a home game next week. And now Dallas is storming back. And I kind of want that to happen. So that's where my mind's at right now. I want to go to Dallas. Because you can't run against the Falcons. Like, you can at the beginning, but if we go up two scores, like, legitimately, that's the only thing you guys could have done to beat us yesterday was run. And that safety ruined that for you guys. Like, you have 1-3 and out, and we're able to put our foot on the gas. Like, you can't run and catch up. Like, it just doesn't work because you're fighting the clock at that point. And I don't know. Where I'm sitting right now, I kind of want to see Dallas. So I don't know, man. But if the Falcons can play like they did yesterday, where the defense was fast. Like, we played really, really well. And the young kids were really good, too. So, you know, if they can keep playing like that, I mean, bring on whoever, because I legitimately think this is our year.
Man, Dan Quinn has done such a good job, man. Such a good job. It very well could be your year. I honestly can't wait to see the NFC Championship game, because regardless of which of those teams come out, that's going to be an awesome, awesome game.
Oh, without a doubt. If it's Green Bay coming to Atlanta, the game's going to end 56-49. Like, it's going to be bonkers. Yep. Just an insane game. So it's going to be fun to watch either way. Justin, I had a lot of fun with you both times that we got to, you know, talk about games this year. It's nice to get a little bit of retribution in a blowout type of way. But, man, it was a fun game. The first quarter was great.
It was fun.
And that dog peeing on that dude was the best thing that's happened to me in the longest time.
That dog peeing on that dude is probably my highlight of that game.
I wish I'd recorded it for you. If I had, we would have posted it on the Next Fan Up Twitter. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Next Fan Up. I'm sure Pod Vader will talk about all the rest of the nonsense that goes on. You can follow me on Twitter at Tim is Hiding for all of my Falcons hot takes in the NFC Championship and hopefully the Super Bowl. But I swear to God, if a safety gets arrested for soliciting a prostitute this time, I'm quitting football forever. Quitting. Justin,
duly noted, Tim.
It's been fun. I'll catch you next time.
Thank you.
All right. Green Bay Brian here tonight, joined by James, our Texan super fan, and Patriot Pat. How's it going, fellas?
How's it going? Good to be victorious. Congratulations on your victory.
Yeah, thanks. Hard fought, but we're here to talk about your game. How did this game shake out for you guys? As expected, or totally off the wall?
Well, I mean, it worked out pretty well as we had said, as far as what it would take for Houston to make this a competitive game. The Patriots foolishly tried to get into a turnover battle with the Houston Texans, and you know what? They ended up losing the turnover battle as well. You know, we played them close in the first half. As far as a loss goes, especially a playoff loss where you end up losing by 18, I think was the final margin. It was probably the most competitive 18-point loss, and probably a lot more competitive than what a lot of people were expecting going in with the Texans and Patriots.
Yeah, I agree, which is kind of weird because we were talking about, you know, will they meet that 16-point cover because it was so astronomically high. And we did, you know, as you mentioned, we won by 18 points, but it didn't feel like a walk away win. Yeah. You know, and granted that had a lot to do with the turnovers that were happening, but you know, when James and I recorded our preview podcast a few days ago, you know, we were both saying that we felt like, you know, it's going to be the kind of game where you get into the fourth quarter and you look up and like, wouldn't you know it, you know, the Patriots have put up 30 points. You don't know quite how that happened. And I think that's exactly what we saw on Saturday. It was, you know, it's like interception, fumble, lost, interception, you know, and then you look up and you're like, oh, well, actually, look at that. We have a whole bunch of points and the Texans don't. I guess it's really not that close a game.
Yeah, and I mean, the special teams that we kind of brought up, and I frequently have brought up because we ranked dead last in special teams. You know, Texans let up another kickoff return for a touchdown. I mean, early in the game, all the stats were showing just how good of a game Houston was playing. The Patriots only ran six offensive plays, and the Texans had managed to put up, I believe, 6 points, had done two field goals at that point. And it was one of those things like, yeah, the Patriots have only run six offensive plays. They went three and out once, and then they put up a three-play touchdown. So, you know, let's not brag too much about that. And then they let up the kickoff return for a touchdown. So you're down by a lot early, but all the stats show like, oh, well, it really shouldn't be this bad. Then kind of the glacial force that is what tends to be the Patriots' playoff performance kind of comes into play. The Houston defense ended up out there for shockingly more than just six offensive plays. They started to wear down. What was a good, you know, four-man and sometimes even three-man pass rush on Brady, you know, it was getting good pressure early, but then, you know, as you're asking the defense to do that for, you know, 45, 50 plays, you know, not even Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Merciless are able to get back to Brady that frequently. It was encouraging to see just how well the secondary covered for the most part. But, you know, as the game wore on and the pressure wasn't getting back there and Brady had, you know, 4, 5, 6 seconds to throw the ball and you have guys like Edelman and Hogan with that much time to get open, you know, they're going to get open eventually. And that's what ended up just kind of burning us.
True. And, you know, it's funny, too, because, again, on that preview podcast, Neil asked me, you know, how are you guys going to deal with, you know, Clowney and Merciless? And I blew him off. You know, I'm like, well, whatever, it's fine. And, like, no, those were pretty legit guys. Like, they were banging around Tom like a rag doll a little bit, you know? So, you know, good to get out of there alive and without injuries, at least as far as I know yet. You know, so I'm grateful for that. And yeah, we won the game. So, you know, W's all the way around.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the pressure that Houston brought, Pat. Any concern that maybe there may be a blueprint there, or is this just a matter of Houston having a really talented defensive line?
Well, I mean, that is the blueprint. The blueprint's been, you know, on the book since 2007. It's you drop eight and you rush four and Brady's going to have a problem, right? Because he prefers the intermediate routes, as everybody knows. If you try and blitz him, you're leaving a guy open, and he'll hit him every time. You know, it takes him, you know, under 3 seconds to get rid of the ball. So don't blitz, drop extra guys, you know, clog up the middle. You make him hold the ball a little bit too long. We don't have, you know, five all-pro offensive linemen. So someone's going to get free. What was happening a little bit on Saturday is guys were coming clean, right? And that's just not what you want to see. We had kind of shades of, you know, the AFC Championship game from last year with that. But, you know, you give Tom Brady the ball 70 times, he's probably going to win the game. Like, as long as our defense is up to snuff. And frankly, it helps when we're playing against a team with just a really, really terrible quarterback. Although I will say he did have one, like, arcing rainbow where the who's that rookie receiver you guys have? I'm blanking on his name, but like it went right through.
Will Fuller.
Hands. Will Fuller. Oh, that was tragic, man. That must have just turned your stomach when you saw that.
Yeah, I mean that was one of the few times where it's you look up and you're like, well, yeah, he's a rookie, but you know, he's been making catches like that, you know, for the majority of the season. That was, you can't let something like that go. Against the Patriots, you know, you're going to have to play a near perfect game to have a shot against them. And that's one of the things that you can't let fall to the ground. And I mean, on top of that though, like the play call from O'Brien, you know, settling for field goals in the red zone. You know, we had three meaningful red zone trips, walked away with two field goals and a touchdown. But, you know, if you line up against Bill Belichick and you want to play a traditional football game, you're going to lose, you know, 75-80% of the time. That's just what the stats over the past, you know, 10 years or so have borne out. So when you're in the red zone and you have a defense that is putting up a lot of pressure on Tom Brady, you know, take the shots at the end zone. You know, you're not going to beat the Patriots with field goals. You're going to need some touchdowns.
I agree. So let me read it one last time, and it's the last time I'll ask you, at least on this podcast. Let's say O'Brien stays with you guys, and I think he should, and I think Cornell should stay, and I think everybody should stay in place, and you got a bunch of good young guys. You don't have a quarterback. What do you think about Jimmy G?
I mean, we've sunk so much into the quarterback as far as, like, you know, finances or, you know, cap space. We're going to need a cheap quarterback, and that's kind of a box that Jimmy G would check.
Oh, man. For a year. Yeah, that's true. That's true, actually.
Well, for one
year.
Yeah, for 1 year. And then the great thing is we can dump Brock and only pay, I don't know, $4-6 million. I've looked it up so many times that I should know this offhand. But, you know, you basically have this bridge here. The problem is that as far as draft resources, we went completely on the offense last year. We, you know, ignored the defense, which didn't work out poorly this year. But we can't just spend all of our draft picks once more on the offense. You know, unless you're willing to take next to nothing for Jimmy Garoppolo, then I would rather us just use one on a developmental quarterback, or, you know, just a second round quarterback, maybe even use our first round if somebody's falling down to us at that point, and just try it out from there, strengthen up the defense, and then go out and get a vet, you know, similar to like what Ryan Fitzpatrick did this past year, because, you know, we made it to the divisional round of the playoffs with by far the worst quarterbacking in the NFL. You know, all we have to do is make that mediocre. Not to go completely off the way Denver won their Super Bowl, but, you know, it's a way that works, and the reason that it works is because you can spend money much more effectively on defense now that you have all these teams dumping $20 million into their quarterback position.
See, I don't know, man. I think you spending another first-round pick on another defensive lineman and putting off quarterback, just hoping to get a mediocre guy to get you by, is exactly what you've been doing for the last 15 years. And I think it's a lot like kicking field goals against the Patriots.
Yeah. I mean, it very well could be. But, you know, going out and, you know, dumping multiple draft picks to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, or multiple years worth of draft picks to trade for him, or to go out there and dump another $10 or $15 million into the position itself, you know, you're hamstringing yourself at that point.
Well, I mean, like, it, not to put a sunk cost fallacy on it, right? Like, you really screwed up with Osweiler. And, like, I know you've been saying that since the day they went out and got him. You were saying that before they went out and got him. You were praying to God that they didn't, but they did. But that can't tell you I'm never going to spend money on a quarterback now because I have all this money tied up in a guy that shouldn't be playing.
Well, no, I mean, it does turn into a sunk cost fallacy at some point, but when you're up against the cap restriction, you know, the sunk cost fallacy doesn't get you next year. I'm not saying never go out and, you know, roll the dice on a guy that has some question marks. It's just got to be, you have to clear this amount of money off your books. I mean, he's going to take up 10% of the cap next year. You know, it's similar to like what Dallas has going on with Romo and Dak. Like, it works out really well for them because they're still only spending about $22 or $23 million on the quarterback position, which is, it's tenable in the league. But if you have basically a $16 million, $17 million guy that shouldn't be on the roster, you know, taking up 10% of your cap, you can't go out and then dictate another, you know, $5, $10, $15 million on that spot. You got to at least try and get the cheap rookie.
So, James, obviously you're knocked out of the playoffs here. Sorry to see you go, I'll admit. But what's your long-term outlook for the Texans? What do you think the offseason is going to look like? What do you think next year might look like?
Well, it's going to come to a head really quickly. It's an open secret that Bill O'Brien wants more control over player personnel decisions. He got some of that this past off season. Rick Smith had to kind of cede some of his power, which, you know, anybody who has ever taken a demotion at work, you know that that's not a very good position to be in. There's probably going to be some finger pointing this off season as to who's at fault for Brock. And, you know, if they take player personnel decisions away from O'Brien, it wouldn't shock me if he just walked away from the situation. I'm not a big fan of Rick Smith and how he has done a lot of things. He has hit in the past drafts on occasion, especially on like defensive talent. But he's also, you know, basically wasted a couple first round picks here and there. I would not be sad to see him go if that's kind of the cost of keeping O'Brien. I think he has, turned us around from when we went 2-14 and, you know, ended up with Clowney. I think he's done a good enough job with the defense that he should stick around. And I'm always of the mindset of you should hold on to a coach 1 year too long as opposed to getting rid of him 1 year too early. And kind of the big case study in that is Ron Rivera. He was ready to get knocked out the door before, you know, they went on their run last year and ended up 15-1. He's not doing so great this year, but, you know, that's another story. Just continuity is going to be king. So a lot will depend on if O'Brien goes. If O'Brien goes, then you're going to see a whole revamp of the offense, which, you know, is never a good thing. I see them having to blow up a lot of money on both Clowney and DeAndre Hopkins, the way that they've played. They've already announced they're going to pick up Hopkins' option for next year. So that's good. But I'd rather him get his deal in before the likes of Antonio Brown get his extension in or Odell Beckham get his deal in, just so that we could be the ones setting the market price and not be a victim of what the market price is.
All right. And we'll give the last word to Patrick. Patrick, we're recording the podcast during the Steelers and Chiefs game right now. Who would you rather see play the Patriots next week?
Probably the Chiefs, because I think if it gets down to a close game, then I can always count on some really poor clock management and bad decisions by the Chiefs. And then again, like, if I'm playing the Steelers, I can count on the Steelers, like, really just taking a quarter of that game off, maybe a couple guys getting suspended or Mike Tomlin getting ejected from the game for tripping somebody. So, you know, really, I kind of like my chances with either one of them.
All right. Well, there you have it. We'll be sure to hear from you next week, Patrick. And James, I hope to hear from you real soon.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much, Brian. And congratulations, Patrick. I don't really think there's much of a doubt the better team won, but it was at least an entertaining game.
Thank you. And I really like your team. I want you to get a quarterback so I can like him even more.
Story of our franchise.
Love all around. There you have it, folks. We'll be talking to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Green Bay Brian here tonight, joined by Kevin, our Cowboys super fan. Kevin, really tough loss. I think, I feel your pain. The Packers have been here a number of times in the last few years, and I know how that feels to lose a game in such a dramatic fashion like that. I'm certainly not going to try to beat you up, but I'm going to give you a chance to talk a little bit about your team here. What did you see out there against the Packers tonight?
I guess in times like these, we should open this up with a joke. So at least the bright side, it wasn't Romo's fault, right? So at least that's the bright side. But no, in the beginning of the game, I mean, the Cowboys defense, we didn't even deserve to be on the field with the Packers. I mean, through the first three drives, three touchdowns, I believe you guys had like 220 yards of offense on your first three drives alone. So you jumped off to a 21-3 game. And when we spoke in the preview show, we said that the Packers needed to get off to a fast start, but I don't think either of us could have imagined this that fast of a start, or at least I didn't. And then,
to give
Marinelli credit, he did make some very good adjustments. I mean, he started bringing more men. I mean, when Rodgers was just carving us up, we were only sending three men sometimes, four, never blitzing anyone, and Rodgers had 5, 6, 7 seconds in the pocket, and we our secondary, you can't cover people for that long. So then Skandrick had a sack in there. Jeff Heath actually had the biggest play of the game for the Cowboys defense. He tried his darndest to spark a comeback, and a somewhat successful one, as we did tie it up late in the game. But Rodgers had a magnificent throw down the sideline. I mean, Byron Jones, I'm not really sure what he was doing on that play. I'm not sure how he could lose track of Jared Cook, I mean, at a time like that. Third and 19, 15 seconds left in the game. Like, I don't understand how you could possibly not even be within 3 yards with him on the sideline. But that's a different discussion. Byron Jones, he's had difficulty covering tight ends at times throughout the season. And Jared Cook, that wasn't even the biggest – I mean, it was the biggest play, but he had a massive game. I think he had over 100 yards receiving on the day. Cowboys couldn't cover him all day. So the Cowboys definitely they need to get an improved pass rush, because that finally came back and reared its ugly head right in our face. I mean, in the beginning of the season, I was always ranting about how poor the Cowboys pass rush was, and that going into every game, I was nervous, because with a lackluster pass rush, any competent quarterback could pick you apart. Now, not every quarterback is Rodgers, but any competent quarterback could put up 14, 20, 24 points pretty quickly with 5, 6 seconds what Rodgers had. But that's besides the point. We need a pass rusher. DeMarcus Lawrence obviously isn't what we thought he was at this point in his career. We had a lot of hope last year. He had 8 sacks in pretty much the second half of the season alone. He had 1 sack this year, was suspended. Reoccurring injuries is a problem with him as well. So we definitely need to draft defensive linemen again in the offseason. Hopefully we'll spend whatever, I don't know, I'm not sure the specifics of the cap, but that needs to be a focus in the offseason. Our pass rush needs to improve. Our secondary, honestly, I'm not that displeased with it. I mean, we had a few pass interference calls, but overall, concerning the ineptitude of our front seven, really, I don't think we can really put that much blame on the Cowboys secondary. What else do I have to say about this game? Oh, my goodness. Dan Bailey, good to see him make a clutch kick. Felt good for him. And we'll end on a good note for the Cowboys. Dez Bryant, loved seeing him just tear up the Packers defense. Good to see him play great in a big game. He doesn't get the respect he deserves a lot of time because he has a unfair label of being a diva. I mean, sometimes that is true, but it is overhyped because everything is overhyped in Dallas. So the more negative things he does, the more attention he gets, and the good things he does, he doesn't really get credit for what he does, but he absolutely had a dominant game. Couldn't be stopped. At first the Packers tried to cover him one-on-one with Gunter, and they soon realized that was not a good decision. But other than that, I'm obviously very disappointed. It'll be interesting to see where Romo goes this offseason, obviously. And obviously the Cowboys look to be in a very good spot for the foreseeable future with Dak and Ezekiel and a pretty young offensive line, pretty much all wrapped up till 2020 and beyond. So the future definitely looks bright in Dallas. But this day in particular is a somber one indeed. After a great season, tough to go one and out in the tough to do a Peyton Manning in the playoffs, but things aren't easy in life, so what can you do?
And I guess for as disappointed as you are, I could not be honestly, I'm just exhausted. It was just such a back and forth game. Obviously, the Packers took the lead early, like we had talked about in that preview. As badly as we started against the Giants, we started equally as good against the Cowboys. Those first three drives, very machine-like. We just could not be stopped. Rodgers today, another MVP caliber game. He's been playing lights out for the better half of the last 8-9 games. And you saw it again. There's just some plays that he makes that nobody else can. I think that play to Cook there, to that play of the game, I don't know how many quarterbacks even in history could make that throw. I think, you know, you think about the rollout and then to put that ball on a line where it needed to be, you know, maybe only Jim Elway is the only other guy that could make that throw. The good news is we found a way to win without Nelson today. We talked a little bit about what his vacancy was going to mean for this team. And honestly, I think it was a total team effort to try to replace him. Nobody in the pass catching department really stood out above the rest. I think they all contributed. Devontae Adams had a couple of key third down conversions. We were trying to get Randall Cobb the ball in space. Saw us throw a couple of really short, like wide receiver screen passes to him and kind of try to get the ball moving. And you mentioned Cook too. He did have a huge game today. He's so good for our offense. Even if he's not the one that's catching the ball, he has a way of sucking up coverage, and it really allows a lot of the other receivers to run a little bit more wide open. And honestly, when Rodgers has struggled this year, it has often been, it's been either that he's holding the ball and waiting for something big to develop, or the wide receivers are not getting open. And, you know, as soon as he came back into the offense, it was like a totally different offense. The run game today, I can count on two hands how many times we handed the ball off. It feels like I don't recall too much of a commitment to that. But when you got 12 back there throwing the ball like he is, you don't always need that. I will say a couple of really nice runs from Ty Montgomery. I think he finished with a pretty decent average. He got stuffed there at the end for a big loss. But ultimately, he played well enough, and we did see him kind of flexing out. It looked like our offense, we kind of liked the matchup with the empty set and really try to spread the Cowboys' defense out there. And we had a lot of success with that. On defense, man, I think you got to kind of tip your cap to the Cowboys. That's a really good offense. We knew that we were not going to be able to contain Ezekiel Elliott. I think the best you can hope for is that he doesn't beat you. And same thing with Dez. You're right. Gunter is not going to match up one-on-one with him and have a lot of success. I think the Packers did kind of need to pick their poison to a certain extent, and I think they prioritized stopping the run. And you kind of saw the effects of that, the way that Dez was able to score those couple touchdowns against Gunter. I think, you know, those guys get paid too. I think the defense played, obviously they played well enough. I was hoping we might see a little bit more pressure on Prescott today, but I honestly, with as good as that offensive line is, I wasn't really banking on that either. So honestly, it was another very Packers-like defensive performance. A couple of really big plays to take the ball away, and that's been kind of our MO under Dom Capers. Kind of bend, and then force a turnover, and we did that today. Micah Hyde had a really nice interception there to kind of flip the game.
Probably the biggest play of the game.
Yeah, Cowboys were driving there, and we didn't score any points off of that. I think Rodgers ended up turning it over that same drive.
Jeff Heath had the interception on one of the Rodgers.
Can you talk a little bit about Heath? That was really – he's not a guy I'd heard a lot about, but he was making a couple of huge plays.
Yeah,
I think
he intercepted the ball. On the Packers' last drive, the play before the 3rd and 19, he stacked Rodgers. I have no clue how Rodgers hung on to that ball. Oh my God, that he leveled him on a defensive back blitz. I have no clue how Rodgers hung on to the ball. It could have obviously been a huge play in the game, but we won't talk about that because it'll just get me excited. But yeah, Heath had a massive game. I mean, this is his fourth year on the Cowboys. He's been third, fourth safety for some time now. He gets a lot of heat on Dallas Twitter sometimes, but he obviously showed up today. On what is his contract year, I think. So that's good for him for this to be his lasting impression, because he had a great game. But I wanted to say one thing, and somehow I forgot about it. But next week, you guys are going to have just a similar game to what you guys had this week. I mean, the Falcons on yesterday, their offense was clicking on all cylinders. You're going to have to think Rodgers is going to need to outduel the Falcons, which I guess you should probably feel pretty confident in, because I'll take Rodgers in any duel, right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly with the way that he's playing, I think we're going to be able to hang with anybody. That's a really good team, though, and especially I'm a little bit nervous, I'll say. Just Julio Jones is a fantastic wide receiver. I personally think he's the best in the league. And Matt Ryan has been playing lights out, too. And when you kind of couple that with the state of our secondary these days, Ladarius Gunter may be our best corner right now. And I think we may have lost Morgan Burnett to a quad injury today. I don't know if he'll be back and for next week's game. That's a big blow. He's been a really, really useful player for the Packers. He's able to line up all over the place, help to fill some of the gaps we have in the defensive secondary, and also play a little bit of linebacker too. The good news is that maybe, just maybe, Jordy can be back for next week. I heard some reports today that he was tried out a little bit before the game.
I wouldn't expect him to play this week.
But I guess we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed and see if he can be back. But I think you're right. We're going to need to play a near-perfect game next week. I think that's an even better offense than the Cowboys. Obviously we've had to play a pretty near perfect game today for the outcome to be what it was. I'm expecting we're going to need a similar performance next Sunday. But with Rodgers playing the way that he is, you got to have faith as a Packer fan. So I do. And honestly, the one thing I forgot to mention that I wanted to make sure we got in there was Mason Crosby. How money is that guy? A lot of times kickers can be overlooked, especially when you got an offensive player like Aaron Rodgers. And man, he earned his paycheck today. Mason Crosby did.
Oh yeah, he earned it for sure. I thought the second game winning kick before this, after he was iced, I thought it was honestly drifting to the left, right off his foot, and then it curved back in. Oh my! I was excited for a second, and then quickly.
Yeah, I thought it was the ugliest / most beautiful kick in history.
But yeah, I guess we should definitely wrap this up, because I don't know how long we've been on here, but our 30-minute preview was.
Okay, not so well received. That's all right. Any lasting impressions you want to throw in here, Kevin? We obviously end of your season here. Where do you think the Cowboys go from here?
I mean, the Cowboys, obviously the big story of the offseason is, where does Romo go? Does Romo go anywhere? Well, obviously at the ESPN, NFL Network, everyone will keep you updated on that 24/7 in the offseason. But as I said, the Cowboys offensive line is here to stay for a while. Dak and Elliott are obviously both rookies, here to stay. Dez is here to stay. We do need to find a tight end replacement for Witten, because Gavin Escobar obviously is not that guy. I don't even think he has 20 catches in his career. Second round pick for 4 years ago, that disaster of a pick. And we also might be looking for another wide receiver, because I'm not sure if Terrence Williams is going to be a Dallas Cowboy in 2017. So we shall see on that. And like I said, I'm always the Cowboys 100% need to get help on the pass rushing side of the spectrum. And I wouldn't be opposed to some secondary help, because Byron Jones is just impressing me less and less every week. But other than that, the Cowboys are great. So, and I wish you good luck, I guess, even though you just beat me.
Well, I appreciate that. For what it's worth, I think the Cowboys have the best young nucleus in the NFL right now. So from the outside looking in, I would say the future is probably pretty bright.
No, I think it is too. No, I definitely know it's bright. I'll be cocky.
All right. It was great talking to you, Kevin. We'll catch you later on.
Yep, definitely. Good luck.
Thank you. Go Pack Go.
And next up is the Pittsburgh Steelers and their 18-16 win over the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead. And I am your very sad Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick. I am joined here by our Steelers superfan, Greg. And, you know, we're going to do this one like a TV show or, you know, like a movie or something where you start from the end and then you tell the story through that. You're like, you're probably wondering how we ended up here. Like, you know, record scratch. And then you go back to the beginning. So there's about 2 minutes and 40 seconds, something like that, left in this game. It was 18-10. The Chiefs were on the goal line. They were able to score a touchdown with a Spencer Ware run. And, of course, they have to go 4-2 because at that point they were down to one timeout. There's only 2:40 left. And they need to tie this thing because otherwise all the Steelers need to do is to, you know, get a first down and they can run out the clock once they give the ball back. So they go into this pass play, and it was everything about this moment was giving flashbacks to Chiefs fans of that Broncos game in the middle of the season in Denver when they had been snuffed offensively the entire game. And then when it really counted, they were able to work themselves back into being down by 8. They come back with a final drive and a 2-point conversion to take it to overtime and win. Similar thing. They score the final touchdown, and just like the 2-point conversion in that game, they throw it to Demetrius Harris, the usually fumble and drop prone tight end, who is also a basketball player. So he's generally got that good like jump radius, all that kind of stuff. Catch it, 2-point conversion, tied game. But no, there was a flag on Eric Fisher, our left tackle, for holding James Harrison, by the way, man of the match, we'll get back to that, on the play. So that's a 10-yard penalty, making it a 2-point conversion attempt again from 12 yards out suddenly. Of course, they don't make it. Again, we'll get into this a bit later, but you know, it was the sort of hold that you see on a lot of plays. Is it a hold? Yeah, by the book, but it never gets called. And so on a critical juncture, it was disappointing to see that. But either way, the fact was that in this game, it was actually fairly similar to how Greg and I set this up. It was going to be a sneakily low-scoring game despite some of the firepower that was on the field because the Chiefs, despite the fact that they are very susceptible to the run and they gave up 170 yards on 30 carries to Le'Veon Bell in this game. Between the 20s, the Steelers just had their way with the Chiefs. But when it came down to the red zone, the Chiefs tightened up. And all 18 of the Pittsburgh Steelers' points were scored by 6 field goals by Chris Boswell, a NFL playoff record. Meanwhile, the Chiefs scored on their opening possession, looked very good, and then were just totally stymied. They basically did nothing between their opening drive and the final minutes of this game. And that, too, was something that I sort of pointed out to Greg. It's like, look, if the Chiefs can score 20 points, basically they win. The only other games they lost outside of that fluky other loss to the Steelers during the season was when you know, basically, they got that beaten by their opponent scoring 19 every single time. And, yep, it was the same thing. The only time the Chiefs lose is when their offense just cannot get it going. And that was one of these. So I'm tossing it back to you, Greg. Give me your takeaways. Give me your defense of that holding call.
Well, it was a hold, but I've seen that exact play about 100 times on James Harrison. I think he's gotten it called once before in his career. So 2 out of 100, that's not very good. I did think it was a little bit of a cheap call. I did also think it was, leading up to the whole sequence, there was that, to be quite honest, that ugly hit across the middle on that, was it Chris Conley? Is that the receiver's
yep.
name? But that was, Sean Davis, in my opinion, had to make that play. The guy was going to, if he held on to it, he should have had a touchdown. And so he was trying to dislodge the ball. I didn't think it was particularly dirty. I just thought it was unfortunate. And the spot of the field and everything, I thought he had to make the play. But that kind of get glossed over. And that was another interesting thing. He only left for a play. So, maybe the NFL is getting this concussion thing under wraps, or maybe they're also just glazing over it blatantly in the playoffs. But, throughout the whole game, I thought the officiating was pretty wacky. I know, Ross Cockrell got away with a, pretty bad pass interference call against Kelsey. And then I felt like a few times that the refs weren't calling, face masks or illegal hands to the face on receivers and stuff like that. So I just thought it was a very uneven game by the officials, which seems to be the norm in these playoffs. But other than that, I think our preview, like you said, was spot on. I mean, I thought Le'Veon Bell was going to be run into the ground. He had 30 carries. I think he set some type of record today for rushing yards in the playoffs in one playoff season. And then also, Roethlisberger, I was worried that if he got over 25 pass attempts, he would be exposed. And actually played a lot better than I thought, I was expecting. I mean, he did miss Antonio Brown a few times for some big plays. But he also got unlucky with that interception that he threw in the end zone. But that was really the story of the game. That red zone defense of the Chiefs was legitimate, and they kept the Steelers they kept the Steelers off the board. And I was constantly getting frustrated because they would run Le'Veon Bell all the way down the field, and then they got to the 20-yard line, and they started throwing the ball all over the place. They did it like three drives in a row, and they kept kicking field goals. And I felt like they left the door wide open for Kansas City to come back and win the game. Luckily, James Harrison was able to stop them, and with his couple big plays and a couple force plays. I was really interested. I think the number one storyline throughout the whole game, thanks to the commentators, was watching Hill for Kansas City. They kind of made me nervous the whole time. And I'm just looking here at the box score. He wasn't even one of the top receivers for the Chiefs today. I mean, Kelsey had a great game. Macklin was so close to breaking through on different plays. The one play in the end zone where Smith missed him, he had the Artie Burns beat. I thought that was a touchdown for sure. So I almost wondered if the Chiefs hurt themselves by focusing so much of the early game plan on Hill. And it seemed like in the fourth quarter they went away from him and they got a lot more potent. They were, guys were all over the field making plays for the Chiefs against the Steelers. So I don't know. I'm just happy to escape with the win, and that's really how I feel. The Steelers are getting out of town. They're escaping with it because they didn't seize the five red zone opportunities they had, and the Chiefs with that holding call at the end. Just a tough way to lose one.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. The officiating was sort of uneven, which is a shame because I think this was a very evenly matched game between two teams that, I think if you were to play this game 10 times, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, it might be 5-5. These were just two good teams. It was a physical, hard-fought game. And that came up to, a number of those key plays, some of which you mentioned, where it was sort of miscommunications at times. I think on that one Macklin throw you were talking about where, Smith is viewed it as being a back shoulder to the outside. Macklin was playing it as if he was going to, drop it in the bucket deep. And it was just those 2 feet of difference of like which way he looked, it was the difference between a completion for a touchdown and an incompletion. And just things like that came up. But look, I mean, the two things that stand out to me as a Chiefs fan is that our offensive line got worked, and the Steelers defense has just made such huge strides this season. And I think if you look at the way that the Patriots were so vulnerable to the inside rush against the Texans last week, I feel like you have to be feeling pretty confident going into Foxborough. For the Chiefs, I mean, it's back to the drawing board on some things. I mean, you mentioned the possible fixation on Hill. I mean, I think some of that's been a little bit of media hype, but I think Hill is a sort of a stand-in for a lot of different players that Andy Reid has had over the years. Before it was DeAnthony Thomas. He's still on the team, but he doesn't get used that much. Before it was Dexter McCluster. He always likes having that sort of gadgety guy who's a threat to get the ball in space in different ways, and is using him as a placeholder, as like, you know, as a, basically a chess piece in all of his play design stuff. And it worked really well on a few of those. We saw that with the shovel pass to Kelsey up the middle, and a few other ones. But at the same time, while in some ways he's a more dynamic receiver than Macklin, he's not a natural receiver yet. He's still learning. And I think, as you said, I think if they would have just worked into some more conventional stuff of just trying to get the ball to Kelsey and Macklin, they probably would have kept some of those drives going. And that is, you know, it's one of the constant criticisms of Andy Reid in Kansas City. I mean, I think some of his play design is brilliant, and it's what allows the Chiefs to overachieve, you know, when they have sort of like league average QBs, league average running back play since Jamaal Charles went down. And yet they've been this successful. I mean, 12-4, and in the divisional round with a, you know, with a bye and a home game, granted they lost it, but, you know, and so on one hand you have the creativity that can allow you to overachieve, and at the same time you have situations where probably just playing it straight would get you a lot more production, but instead he gets really cute and you end up with like weird plays that get blown up, and just sort of a weird Frankenstein offense that can't necessarily keep the ball moving. Granted, I think, again, I mean, you know, as you, the Steelers fan, you got to be happy with what you saw out of your defense. We talked mostly about your offensive struggles. Both were offensive struggles. But are you feeling like this represents a big step forward for the Steelers defense, or do you think this is mostly the Chiefs shooting themselves in the foot and just, you know, some close misses there?
Well, I think it is more of a, in my opinion at least, more just showing the nation the development of the defense. They are a lot younger. They're playing a lot of guys. I don't know if they have those game changers like a Polamalu on this defense, but they are faster, which maybe led to Hill struggling more to break plays or being effective, because the overall team defense speed is so much better than it was even from week four. And you're seeing some guys come of age. Like, I think Dupree has really just, I mean, he has only played a handful of games this year because of the injury. He's really coming to his own. So those are exciting points. And they're kind of modeled after your Chiefs defense, this bend, not break, and trying to get some guys to make plays. You guys have the luxury of having that phenomenal player, Eric Berry, who really showed up big. I mean, I thought he was going to hurt Le'Veon Bell a few times. He came like a rocket and really blew him up in the backfield or whatnot. And I mean, I haven't seen anyone play Le'Veon Bell that way on this few isolated plays. And that middle linebacker he has had, I thought he played really well overall. I forget his name, maybe Mitchell. But I mean, for the Steelers on defense, I think they are developing, and I think they're just to the point where they are good enough where the offense could carry them to a Super Bowl, where early in the season they were going to definitely hold the team back, whereas they're just, I think they're league average. And, I mean, I have a lot of respect for the Chiefs. I thought that they were probably the best overall team left in the playoffs right now. So it was kind of bittersweet to meet them in this round, because I really did think that these are two of the better teams in the league, and I'm kind of sad to see them go. I was hoping that this was going to be an AFC title match and not have the Patriots in the AFC title matchup. And, you know, I think these two teams are a lot more similar than they're not. And, you know, Kansas City, I think they're rising. They're still rising. So maybe next year they'll break through.
And the good news is that I think a lot of people that don't pay a lot of attention to the Chiefs, you know, they have this impression that it's an old defense, an old team. I mean, similar to probably some of the perceptions of the Steelers, and they're similar in that way as well, in that despite the fact there are some key guys that are, you know, north of 30, like for the Steelers, I mean, obviously you have the immortal James Harrison, which, as I teased and mentioned earlier, I mean, that guy was definitely the man of the match. I mean, it was just unstoppable. Eric Fisher could not control him. He had at least a sack, and he seemed to always be hurrying Alex Smith. I mean, I guess, yeah, Alex Smith only sacked once, but he was just fleeing James Harrison basically the entire game. So, you know, James Harrison is 38 and pushes up, you know, the average age of your defense quite a lot. But, you know, the rest of those guys, I mean, like Brett, you know, but Dupree, you have Artie Burns showed up in a few plays in this game. You have a bunch of guys all over the place that are young and coming up. It's similar with the Chiefs. I mean, basically the only guys over 30 that are key starters for the Chiefs are Alex Smith on offense, and on defense it's Tamba Hali and Derek Johnson, both of which are close to their swan songs. I mean, Hali was not really, you know, an impact player in this game. He may retire after this year. Derek Johnson was out on IR on his second Achilles rupture. He's 33 or 34. So, I mean, who knows what we're going to get out of him in the future. But you had also had big guys showing up that are young, like Marcus Peters. Eric Berry, despite the fact he's been in the league for a long time, I think he's like 26 or 27. You have Chris Jones on the defensive line, who is a great young pass rusher and a rookie. And so there's a lot of young talent on this Chiefs team. I do hope that they're able to move forward. I think Chiefs fans are mostly going to be concentrated on you know, whether or not there's a potential for us to upgrade at the quarterback position after this game. And I don't really – we'll see if there's any type of opportunity that arises for that. I mean, I think Alex Smith is better than we're probably likely able to get on the open market there, but that's sort of an off-season discussion. Either way, for you guys, sort of similar to, I think, in a way, you know, what we were talking about, looking at the New England Patriots against that good Texans defense. Granted, it was a good Texans defense, but – I think a lot of Patriots fans and generally the, you know, most football watchers were surprised at how stymied they were and how much they seemed to trip over themselves. And it's like, well, if this is, you know, this is not a team that can win an AFC Championship game. Granted, the Steelers, I mean, it looked better. They didn't make as many mistakes. But nonetheless, I mean, they relied on 6 field goals to win this game. They did not punch it in with a touchdown throughout the entire game. Are you worried at all, in sort of a similar vein, that the Steelers have some real offensive dysfunction that they got to work out if they're going to beat the Patriots?
Not so much against the Patriots. I think the Patriots defense is very much overhyped. I mean, they make plays, but let's not confuse anything here. The Chiefs were the best defense left in the playoffs, in my opinion. So, you know, it was a cold night, unexpected game time. They weren't prepping for that all week. All that stuff goes into it. I think it was more of a really impressive performance by the Chiefs defense keeping the Steelers out five or six trips out of the red zone there, out of the touchdowns. And I don't think the Patriots could do that if we got that many opportunities. So I'm not overly worried about that. I'm more worried about the Belichick factor when they face off against the Patriots. More, you know, a trick play to the wide receiver who throws a touchdown pass, those type of things, than the defense holding up the Steelers' offense and making a difference. I mean, I could see the Patriots scoring 38 and, you know, just outscoring the Steelers, but I can't see them stopping the Steelers. I mean, the Kansas City's defense is one of the best in the league. I mean, you know, probably Houston and theirs were probably the best left, and you saw what Houston did to the Patriots, and you saw what the Chiefs did to the Steelers. So I'm not overly worried that way.
All right. Well, good luck to you, sir. And you're definitely going to be the team I'm going to be rooting for, because as the team that knocked us out, it's like one of those weird little fan things you can do. It's like, ah, well, you know, the only team that could beat the Chiefs is the team that won it all. So I'm behind you guys all the way from here on out. Congrats on the win, and enjoy the rest of your evening, sir.
All right. Thanks so much.
That's going to do it for this week's Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you to all the super fans for participating today and throughout the year. I'm officially eliminated, but I will still be helping with the hosting and getting this put together so we can get this out. So unfortunately for you, you are not rid of me yet. I will be back next week, as will the competitors in the conference championships. Go ahead and drop us an email, nextfanup@gmail.com. Follow us at Twitter, @NFUpodcast. You can find us on our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com, and on Facebook, just search for Next Fan Up. You'll find all of our stuff there. This is it. Just a couple weeks left, and we're going to be heading into the off season. If you have topics you want us to cover, things you want to get into, we are happy to. Just hit us up on any of those addresses I provided. With that, I'm going to leave you with regular citizen unemployed human being Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is 4 quarters long.